Hello, my name is Sky Wilson. It's my honor to be here today on the Old Mole to interview Mr. Kent Ford. Kent Ford is a founding member of the Portland, Oregon chapter of the Black Panther Party. He's a longtime community activist, public intellectual, people's historian, and elder street fighting statesman. As a lifelong organizer in Portland, he helped organize the Fred Hampton Memorial People's Health Clinic to provide free health care to community members. He also organized and volunteered for years at the Panthers' Free Breakfast for Children program, which fed 125 school children a day. He continues to be a critical voice in our world that takes up issues ranging from poverty to racism, colonization to the prison industrial complex. He currently leads Black Panther legacy tours of Portland's Albina neighborhood. As Juneteenth approaches, and as we just passed the 3-year anniversary of George Floyd's murder, today we discuss topics ranging from the long tradition of the radical Black organizing to current decolonial activism. Welcome, Mr. Ford. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you for having me.
In the last 3 years, we've seen an increase in popular and political discussions regarding Juneteenth. Many organizations recently began recognizing the holiday. And then in 2021, President Biden signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act, making Juneteenth a federal holiday. Of course, the energy to recognize Juneteenth didn't begin in any boardroom or on a congressional floor. Would you please speak about the long history of Juneteenth and the link between organizing to protest the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers and the politics of recognizing Juneteenth as a federal holiday?
Excellent question, young man. Juneteenth goes back over 100 years after slavery, and it basically was a national holiday and a state holiday in Texas. But after the deaths of George Floyd and Memorial Day, and 3 years ago that you alluded to, it elevated it to a national holiday, just that quick. I knew guys, some of the guys over the years, they even named themselves Juneteenth. And it was celebrated in communities, individual communities. But who would have thought, in just 3 years, 1 year after George Floyd, that we would make it a national holiday, and just overnight. It's just going to show you the power of street protests and mass movements, people that's been in the struggle for generations. Like Angela Davis, Karen Anderson, all these people, they never wavered. And these were the biggest protests, Sky, in American history, like in a couple of hundred from being over 8,000, and not just in America, but for the world. The state of Oregon set the standard, not just for the United States, but for the world. They sustained the protest for over 100 days, and I want to say this, and I'm not stretching it. I live this, and I see it from day to day, and I see how slow things can move, and I see how fast things can move. More progress has been made since the deaths of George Floyd on Memorial Day in 2020 than civil rights accomplished in over 50 years. We're still fighting the voter suppression, gerrymandering. Just you can get 18 months of just hanging out, handing out water at the polls in the state of Georgia, and we're still fighting the same thing with the 1964 Civil Rights Act that we've battled over ever since 1964 during the administration of Lyndon Johnson, from Dr. King to Malcolm to all icon guys that set the standards for us, and I don't think I'm stretching it. I live this, and I've seen it, and I've seen what. But that's how quick things can happen. You could see even the Black Lives Matters printed on the streets from the spaceships in space in the downtown Washington, D.C. And these were the biggest protests in American history. And I'm not just saying this off of my head. This comes from the mainstream newspapers, the Washington Post, the New York Times. Take it back to 1958, when Malcolm was first getting his footage in America. Over 2,000 mainstream American newspapers, you didn't have not one black reporter. This was in the late 50s. And then when the Sixers came along, their wives were afraid to come into the neighborhood to cover what was going on in the Black community. So that's when they had a lot of Black reporters. The same way with the colleges, the universities, the corporations, Nikes, Adidas, the big corporations have budgets big as half of the a lot of the world's countries had to recognize, you know, something had to be done. And so they started reaching out to colleges and universities and grad schools, recruiting people to come out and hit the colleges and universities. But Oregon has always been a good state for this, for some of the mainstream colleges and universities. You take Portland University, for example. They recruited a lady out of Harvard University grad school to come out to run a foreign exchange program. And with that said, you know, and this was all not through legislation, all from the streets, from the protests. And I love guys like you guys, your PhDs, the scholars, the writers, the researchers, and all these. I love all you guys. It all takes place right there on the street corner. Malcolm would say, "Let your blood run in the streets," and that's exactly what happened right after George Floyd. People started hitting the streets in massive numbers, and all these white supremacist statues and icon statues was coming down, and all, not just here. All over the world. The world will never be the same. Number 7, we want to immediately end the police brutality that murdered Black people. That was written by some Oakland Merritt College students in 1966. It's more valid today when it was written back then in 1966, 2023. They started tracking the murders in America in the year 2015, during the Obama administration, during our first Black president administration. Every year was 1,000 people being dusted by the police in America. Now, check this out. In the whole European Union, just last year, only 10 people got dusted by the police. In America, it was over 1,100. Yeah, you guys can fact check me on anything I say today.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Foran. Would you please speak about any connections you see between the history of Juneteenth and the Land Back movement?
Sure. Just yesterday, that was a beautiful article in The Guardian talking about the profits some of the major colleges and universities that made off slavery and the reparations and that's owed to the people of the world, colonized people of the world under slavery. The amount of profits that were made off the enslavement. And some of them have these, Harvard University, a lot of universities in England have these large endowments of funds. And now they wondering how they got all these funds. And it was during colonization, during slavery. Just like they signed that act, Sky, Biden signed the act, making Juneteenth a national holiday, he can do the same thing with the reparation thing. It's not going to be done during legislature, not the state house, not city hall, and not the Congress or the Senate. Everything's going to come from the streets. Again, you know, I admire professors, the colleges, mainly the researchers. You guys have been following those stories this week about the latest revelations about Dr. King and Malcolm X. You know, when he went to visit Coretta King. They had Dr. King in jail. And he went to visit Coretta and he said, just tell him, you know, that if things don't work out his way, you know, I'm still going to go my way, you know. The historians, the scholars, the research, they want you to say what makes you think that there was a division between these guys. But it wasn't. You know, and they even had back channels. And most of the back channels were through their wives. They took him to where Coretta lived at, and he wrote out the message for Dr. King to read, for Coretta to take to him, you know, when they had him in prison there, you know. And it was just 64 years ago, you had the Children's March. It's just an incredible story. During the Children's Crusade in Birmingham, Alabama, that broke the siege on segregation and the bus boycott and enabled Dr. King to get the Nobel Peace Prize. The New York Times. They had a reporter there, and he said he had covered war in he had covered World War II in Europe, but he had never seen nothing like the brutality he had seen in Birmingham, Alabama, during the Truman's Crusade. This is America. Could you imagine that?
Thank you. Thank you. Last month marked the 3-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. For a time, his murder and the protests that followed focused the nation's attention on the intersection of racism, policing, and the allocation of public and state funds. What do you think is an especially important lesson from this time? What did it reveal?
Excellent question. Thanks for that question. First of all, you had the Portland Police, but that was the first year that the Portland Police Department never did get a budget increase. 2021, 22, 23, they got everything they asked for. They asked for body cameras, they complained about that. But even when you get the body cameras, that money go right into the police budgets and they can do what they want with it. And they got they increased the purrs for guys to sign up, but more policemen were resigning and everything because of the respect they were losing. You can give these guys the Pentagon's budget. After George Floyd, one of the most popular quotes in the street during the protest is, "I don't want to have to say another MF name." And we've said hundreds of them since then. Yeah, Breonna Taylor, you know, name after name after name after name. It came Memphis, Kentucky, Louisville, you know, Texas, you name the state. You know, you're trying to get the police themselves and get on these review boards and all that stuff. They block every, police unions are so strong, they block everything. And then nothing can get done. So whoever controls the guns in the city controls the city. And that's pretty much where it's at. I go back over 60 years in Portland and dealing with the Portland Police Department. And in the old days, you go down and tell the police chief about police brutality, and he would get up and walk out. He said, "What's the matter? The black community don't want no police protection?" That wasn't even what it was about. In a 14-month period, you had 6 blacks got dusted by the police in a 14-month period. This was in the late 60s and early 70s. And nothing was never done about none of it. The police was able to keep their jobs. They were able to get their PERS and their retirements and everything. And this is how strong the union was. Well, what happened to George Floyd, that broke the siege on a lot of that, you know. We said, well, we got to do something. We had an 82-year-old nun, Sister Mary Jill, came all the way up from Mexico to be part of the Portland protests. And she stayed up here for 2 weeks. She was down at the protests every night at 6 o'clock in the evening. Sometimes she wouldn't leave until 12, until 2 o'clock in the morning. And she just wanted to be a part of it. 82 years old.
It's amazing. This next question has two parts. The first part is, what lessons, if any, do you think current organizers or politically involved folks should learn from the theory and practice of the Panthers?
Thank you for that question very much. You see, Sky, the party had its own buildings, and we had a 10-point platform and program, and we ran our 10-point platform and program out of our buildings. We didn't run them out of Model Cities buildings. We didn't run them out of the Cities buildings. We didn't run them out of the county buildings. We had our own meetings. And therefore, the city didn't exactly know what to do. And then when we set up the people's health clinics, the dental clinics, the breakfast programs, ride the prison program, the biggest population in Salem at the time was the Oregon State Penitentiary. That's the second biggest black population in the state of Oregon at the time, and back in the 60s. We had land, bread, housing, and immediately in the police brutality and murder of black people. They came after us with everything they had, and they hit us with everything they had. This is what the walking tours are about. We go to where the health clinic was. We go to where the we were the only chapter in America, and the party spread to over 30 cities, including the District of Columbia. But we were the only chapter to have a dental clinic. And then that was because this dentist that went to St. Andrews and another dentist, Dr. Clarence Pluitt, who was actually a professor at the OHS Dental School. Everybody came forward. So many doctors came forward. Then that's when the dentists started coming forward and said, well, we want to help out. We want to do something for the community too. But I want to say this, and we go to the breakfast program. We go to these landmark sites now. And I want to go to Chicago for one quick second. In Chicago, they're going to make over 58 sites of National Historical Landmarks for where the Black Panther Party used to have the buildings and the sites. Just to honor Mark Clark and Fred Hampton and the work that the Chicago Black Panther Party did. And I didn't know it here until recently, and it was in the last 3 or 4 months. They have been tracking Fred Hampton ever since he was 14 years old. And then Dr. King, you know, he was a good Jesus man, you know, and he loved the Bible and all this. But Kennedy, JFK thought they could pick his friends from him. And he was telling him some of his friends had communist ties and all this and that, and told him he couldn't associate with these people. But you could, a guy like Malcolm, you couldn't tell Malcolm who to have as a friend. He would never go for it. But Dr. King, he didn't know that JFK had already sicked his little brother, who was the attorney general on him, Robert F. Kennedy, to investigate did he have any communist ties. So if he was subversive, you didn't want to go to Vietnam, and you was against the system. And you know, like Muhammad Ali said, no Vietnamese ever called me that word. Well, the man that had his ear at the time was the man we call X, Malcolm X. Well, what did they do? They took his title away. He lost three years of fighting and revenue and everything. And I had the privilege to meet him one time right here in Portland, Oregon. Well, and he had spoken at the Oregon State University the day before. And he had to make a living then, going around to colleges and universities on a speaker circuit. It was 3 years later before the United States Supreme Court reinstated its, said they couldn't take his title away because he was an Islamic minister. But meanwhile, he had lost that 3 years as far as training and boxing and being the heavyweight champ of the world. He got the title back 2 or 3 times, but he helped set the standards, you know, for the wars of the empire, you know, Vietnam, Iraq, all the other countries that we've been involved in, you know, with wars of imperialism and racial domination and control.
Thank you, Mr. Ford, and happy birthday. I appreciate Thank you. Your time in the wisdom that the wisdom and history that you're sharing with us today. This is Sky Wilson with the Old Mole Variety Hour.